The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Alvin?
Yes, sir.
Is this what I think it is?
I think it is.
What is it? What is this?
Boy. It's Ask Metaxas.
Wait a minute. Yeah? I'm Metaxas.
That's you.
That means you're going to ask me questions?
I will do that, sir.
How do we get these questions?
They come in. Your lovely daughter collects them, and then she gives them to us, and then you answer them. And this is the first one of the new month, so we're excited.
It has a theme, doesn't it?
It does. Now, this month is the publication of your new book, Is Atheism Dead? So the questions are all around that.
Okay, so these
book.
Are thematic questions for Ask Metaxas.
Yes.
And we're going to start now. Go.
Go, go. How can I pre-order your book?
Oh, come on. That's like a softball question.
I know it is. I'm sorry, but
all right, we've got serious questions in here. I didn't put these questions together. You can pre-order the book by going to my website, ericmetaxas.com. I believe the Baker link may be the cheapest one, but you can buy it anywhere, get it from a bookstore. The reason this question is in here is because the publisher says we need as many people to pre-order as possible. It's important to the success of the book. That's why I keep bringing it up. So if you think you might get a copy of the book, you can get it super cheap at those links. And I do ask you, please pre-order your Christmas do your Christmas shopping now.
Yes.
And you'll get it out of the way. I promise you. People are going to love this book.
Okay, here's a great question.
No question.
Okay, why do atheists try to convert people to atheism?
Aha! That's a great question.
Yeah.
Okay, I deal with all this stuff in the book because we know that, I mean, I think one of the central theses of the book is that atheism is intellectually confused. If you are a genuine atheist, if you actually – we're not saying you believe, oh, I hate Christians or I don't know if God exists. But you say, I know that God doesn't exist. If you state that and you say you're an atheist, it follows logically, without any question, it follows logically – that there's no meaning in the universe. Everything is random, accidental. There's no good or evil. These things follow logically. There's no way around it. But typically, atheists live in what Sartre, who was an atheist until the end of his life, which I talk about in the book, he called it bad faith. It sounds better in French. But it's like mal foi. I can't say it. Forgive me. But bad faith means that you're living with two things in your mind, and the two don't – they disagree with each other. So the idea of an atheist saying, I believe in atheism, that there's no God, da, 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 but I'm going to try to convince you of it, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because what does anything matter if there is no God? If there is no God and we are utterly random, the idea that you would benevolently try to lead somebody to the truth, I would simply say to you, where do you get that idea that you should care, that there is such a thing as truth? Anyway, I go into it in the book, but I just want to say another reason I think atheists try to convert people to atheism is why most people try to convert people to their way of thinking. It makes them feel better about themselves. Usually it's an emotional thing, typically. Anyway, but in the case of atheism, the bottom line is I think there's an animus against God or the people of God, mm-hmm. which is often unconscious or subconscious, but I think it comes out in their zeal to get other people to think the way they do.
Now, I don't know if you answered this next question, but did you come across atheists who actually lived out their faith? Did you find
anybody? Well, yes. That's a big part of the argument in the book is that those handful of atheists – now, none of the new atheists. The new atheists I put in a totally different category. They're tremendously dishonest. I was very grieved at how ultimately they came across to me once I looked into them. They don't take responsibility for what they say. But those people who took atheism seriously, I put Woody Allen in that category. I put Jean-Paul Sartre in that category. I put Dylan Thomas, the poet, in that category. I put Ingmar Bergman in that category, the filmmaker. I put Albert Camus in that category, Anthony Flew. I write about them in the book, and they understood that if atheism is real, if there is no God, you're staring into a bleak abyss. You're not happy about it the way Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins seem to be, which is what proves that they're just silly. If you're serious about this idea, you, like these people, will you'll have a hard time. You'll understand. I mean, Sartre said atheism is a long, hard, cruel business because you're struggling with this idea that life has no meaning, but you're trying to find meaning within the meaninglessness. Ultimately, all of these who looked into the bleak abyss said, this can't work, it won't work, and they came out the other side into faith. Camus, I talk about in the book, Jean-Paul Sartre. Now, Dylan Thomas, the poet, and Ingmar Bergman, and I mentioned Woody Allen, when they're very thoughtful, you can see that they are struggling. They're not happy. They struggle. So even though they don't come out believing in the way that Sartre and Camus and Anthony Flew do, they nonetheless, you can see them dealing with this honestly. So the idea of actually being able to live out your faith that there is no God, I don't think it's possible. So the most honest people are the ones who struggled the hardest to do it, and I mention them.
Okay, what was your the favorite part of the book to write and why?
I think the last third, I mean, honestly, I know I'm a broken record, but I'm more excited about this book than I've ever been about any book because there's stuff in here that I think it's going to shock people, like information that they're going to say, where in the world have I been that I missed this? And that's how I felt when I discovered it. But the most fun part to write, the last third of the book, and I actually tell people, you may want to read the last third of the book first, because these are essays on atheism where I take Hitchens and Dawkins in particular to task. Mm. Because they've gotten away with murder. They have gotten away with the murder of God, whom you can't kill, but they don't know that. And those, I think, some of it is funny, some of it is entertaining. I mean, I really had some fun with it. So those chapters were the most fun to write, okay, for sure.
How can Christians make an impact against the soul of atheism, your strategies?
I don't know what this the questioner means about the soul of atheism. So I will say my strategies are you'll get it if you read the book. I can't really say more than that.
Okay. Why do you think that atheism is so popular today?
Well, atheism kind of, you know, didn't seriously exist until what, the 17th century. I mean, it's something that if you are looking for utopia, you're looking to solve the world's problems, but there are things about faith that rub you the wrong way, you really have to tack hard in the other direction. And I think that people have bought the idea, and again, I deal with this. This is the heart of the book, is this idea that rationality or science is not at odds with faith, that is a deep lie in our culture. And so the idea that people have bought into is that faith is all hocus pocus. I want to believe in reason and rationality. And so they really believe that you can be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. I am convinced you absolutely cannot. So atheism is popular because of this misconception. And if we can disabuse people of this profound misconception, which I think we can if they're open-minded, it will not be popular.
Okay, this is a great question. What would you say to a person who became an atheist after growing up in a Christian home?
Well, I mean, I think that's common. It's the same kind of thing, right? People aren't – they don't feel like they have choices. They just know they don't like some kind of religious, maybe fundamentalist upbringing. There's something about it they didn't like or some parts about it they didn't like. And they feel that they've just got to say, okay, I don't really believe God exists. But I want to challenge those folks. I think based on the evidence we have from science, and again, we couldn't have said this 50 or 40 years ago, but we have such overwhelming evidence at this point that I think if you dare to look at what faith really is and dare to look at how atheism cannot work, you're stuck. Maybe you can be an agnostic, but you cannot be an atheist. And I think that – I think I effectively proved that in the book. But I, you know, I hope people will kind of read it and wrestle with
it. Okay, I want to jump ahead to the last question. How do you feel about being the number one best-selling book in the atheism category on Amazon?
I am number one in atheism?
Yes.
Get out.
Out.
I'd like to lower that number to 0.01, and then I'll be really happy. I'm not satisfied. I'll leave it there.
Okay, more people have to order the book so you can be 0.01
on Amazon. Please go to ericmetaxas.com. Thank you.
Pleasing you can hurt you somehow.
Hey, folks, do you wish you remembered names better and thought more clearly? Hey, improve your memory with VivaLore memory support. VivaLore's founder actually prayed that God would show her the solution to memory loss when her mother had dementia. She had divine encounters, and her faith and her background as a pharmacist led Susan Gibson to create VivaLore memory support. VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. Wow. It's won many awards. It has 3 books independently written about it. Visit VivaLore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. VivaLore is for those with normal memory, mild, or severe memory loss. Don't wait until your memory slips. The pathology starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. Wow. VivaLore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R. Go to VivaLore.com, buy 3, and get 40% off with code 340. That's 40% off with code 340. The makers pray that God's glory rests on every pill. VivaLore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R. LOR.com.
Hey, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling in your bones, put taps on your toes.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm holding in my hands a book. It says Jesus Followers, Real Lessons for Igniting Faith in the Next Generation. I care about my generation. I don't care that much about the next generation. But evidently, the authors of this book do. Let's see. It's Anne Graham Lotz. She's a friend. And her daughter, Rachel Ruth Lotz Wright. That's a lot of names there. Anne and Rachel Ruth, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Eric. We just appreciate you having us.
Anne, it's a ministry. You know, I don't really want to. Look. You know I like you. That's because I joke with you. So let me ask you, Anne. I've had you on the program a bunch of times. You write a lot of books. Have you ever written a book with someone else before or with any of your kids before?
No, never have. So this was a challenge and a blessing.
A challenge and a blessing. Wow. Rachel Ruth, sounds like mom has thrown some shade your way.
She is. I'm a little shocked right now. But I loved it. It was a great process for me.
I have a dream of writing a book with my daughter after I'm dead, posthumously. Can I do that? Can you author a book posthumously? Sometimes they publish a book posthumously. Can you author a book? No, listen, we joke around. I've met you, Rachel Ruth, and your other sister, but why did you decide, Anne, to write a book with your daughter, or why did you, Rachel Ruth, decide to write a book with your mom? How did this come about?
You know, I think it started with a real burden that Rachel Ruth had, and I'll let her share that with you. And I also have the burden, Eric, because her 3 children are my grandchildren. And so it's
what?
Made me aware of the next generation.
How does that work? Her kids are your grandkids? Does that make any sense, Albin? That doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, please continue.
And what we're observing in the next generation, actually even in my generation and your generation, is a falling away from real authentic discipleship. And so Rachel, share your burden, your vision for this, because it was her vision for the book, and I've just helped to put my framework on it.
It actually started years ago, and my grandmother, we called her Teta, which was my mom's mom, which means old lady in Chinese. So she told us to name her that. And so we always called her Teta, but it was
because she was from a family of missionaries in China, of course.
Yeah, she was grandmother. Raised in China.
She was raised in China. Okay, so your grandmother, Rachel Ruth, your grandmother, who's Anne's mom, say it again, what you were just about to say something about her, and I'm cutting you off.
Teta. Oh, no. So Teta, we were really close to her. I was very close to my grandmother, and so when she was passing away, it was very difficult for all of us. But I was just, it was sad because I thought, what am I going to do? I'm not going to be able to ask her these questions anymore and hear her wisdom. And And then at the same time, I had three little girls, and taking them to like birthday parties and to school and different things, and seeing that I would talk to their parents, and their parents, maybe they love the Lord, maybe they went to church, whatever, but it was not being passed down to their kids. And it just devastated me. And so I thought, you know, maybe they weren't raised in a home where they saw how to pass it down. Maybe they didn't have an example in their house. And by God's grace, he put me in this family. And so I had on both sides, both sets of grandparents and my parents, all love the Lord. And so the things that I saw in my home, I was wanting to just write stories so that to give an example to people to be able to follow if they didn't have one. So that's
well, I have to say, as I get to know your family more and more, you know, for people who are just tuning in who don't know, and your father, of course, was Billy Graham. And what I've noticed about your family, which is a little bit rare, is that somehow the faith has been passed on particularly beautifully. It's noticeable. I've, you know, obviously met your daughters. I know Sissy Graham Lynch, Franklin's daughter. And when you see that being passed down through the generations, it really is beautiful. It seems appropriate. But as you said, it's rather rare. And I don't know why that is. I think it has something to do with the culture in which we live. Let's face it, the culture militates against faith in the God of the scripture. There's just no question. That wasn't true, you know, 50 years ago, but it is true today. So if you've drunk the Kool-Aid and you're just going along with the tide is going quickly away from scriptural faith. But so in the book, Jesus Followers, what are some of the things you do counsel? What are some of the stories that you tell in the book about how to accomplish this in one's family?
Before she'll tell you some of the stories, let me just tell you that I think the key, Eric, is that the parents need to have an authentic faith for themselves. And you can't just think that you're going to leave your children to the church or to a Christian school and that's where they're going to get it. It's up to parents. It's our great privilege and responsibility to pass the truth to our children, and they have to embrace it for themselves. But it's something that we have to do intentionally and maybe in the culture that you're describing. And I think it's worse because of social media, but I'm sure the first century, you know, world was very brutal also. And yet that's where, you know, faith just blossomed, and that's where the disciples just took off and changed the world. But Ray Truth has written some precious stories. And our thought is that we can use examples from our home and our family that could be So that God has given us a wonderful heritage, but we're inviting people to come into our family and let our heritage be theirs, so that these stories can be theirs. Just like in Scripture, where Abraham is like a father, David's like a brother. You know, those stories are our heritage, and so our family can do that for people who read the book.
But well, since I'm not a member of your family officially, it is, you know, it is hard not to be. I mean, the natural word would be jealous, but I mean just to be, I'm trying to think, what is the word covetous when it's not in a negative sense? But to desire to be a part of something like that, to desire to know how you did it, to see it. And so obviously in writing this book, you're helping people like me and my family, because most of us, you know, we're all ears. We want to know, how do we pass on the most precious thing in creation? How do we pass it on? So yeah, what are some of the stories that you have in here?
Well, there's a bunch about all the different, my grandparents and my parents, and there's one that I've written about my grandfather, how, you know, everybody sees him saw him up on stage, and this, you know, larger than life kind of person, but then behind the doors he was still the same. I mean, just so sweet, so loving. He always would hold our hand, and if we were telling him something about what was happening in our lives, I mean, he would immediately stop and say, well, let's pray about that. And we would just stop right there and pray. And he was very, very much a Southern gentleman and just so sweet. And I remember crawling up on his bed. My sister and I went and spent a weekend with them one time. And when we were, I guess, probably high school, and we all sat down on their bed at night, and the fire was going, it was snowing outside, and we did devotions together. And I don't ever remember a meal with them or getting up in the morning or at night where we weren't talking about scripture, where he didn't open up his Bible and start reading it. And so there are stories like that. There's stories.
Okay, one of the things, yeah. One of the points she makes about Daddy is that he gave her his full attention. Yeah. And then she makes that application to God the Father, who also gives us his full attention, always has time for us. Really, so each one of her stories has an application and then a lesson that you can draw from it. So, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, because I think that's the thing that you wouldn't think a man as busy as he was would give you his full attention when you're with him. And he did. And so I think that's a lesson to learn. And then watching Mom, she has just always been so bold and so courageous and doesn't care what people think about her or anything. And one time we were flying back from Cabo and the president of Pakistan was on her flight. And Mom's like, I have to share the gospel with him. And so we're in the airport. I'm like, she's getting ready to get thrown down on the floor. And he received her. He let her walk up to him. And she shares the gospel with President Musharraf. And so all those examples about being courageous, not worrying about what's going to happen to you or what people think. And
this is, this is really important. And I mean, I even try to do it on this program because people, they're living their lives. And you want to know, what does it look like? What could it look like? And the more you see boldness, the more you feel comfortable being bold.
Yes.
You know, I think I prayed for a woman on a plane recently, and I realized it's the first time I've ever done that because it was a really big thing for me to do that. But we all know that the Lord kind of meets us in those moments, and it was really beautiful. But when you see your own mother doing that, I mean, depending on your age, you know, you might just be horrified and embarrassed, or if you're a little older, you might just say, gosh, that's really cool. That was really wonderful. We're going to go to a break, folks. I'm talking to Anne Graham Lotz and one of her lovely daughters, Rachel Ruth. The book is Jesus Followers, Real Life Lessons for Igniting Faith in the Next Generation. I can't think of too much that's more important than this. So I hope you'll consider getting a copy of Jesus Followers. Then we'll be right back. Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works.
Dark ashamed, darling, darling.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to Anne Graham Lotz and her daughter, Rachel Ruth Lotz, right? The new book is Jesus Followers. They've written it together. I'm impressed by that, but it actually makes sense for this book, right? It's about passing things to the next generation. So parents, grandparents, kids, when you, wrote the book, I know that you draw on your family. So you were mentioning, Rachel Ruth, your grandmother, Anne's mother, Ruth Graham, Billy Graham's wife. I mean, she always comes across in any account that I've seen as a real heroine of the faith. And I think someplace in the book you talk about her praising God amidst pain. That, to me, is the real mark of a Christian. People can say, oh, I'm a believer, I believe. But you can see that is rare. And when you see it, you say, I know that person really knows God. So tell us about that, because that, to me, that's it.
Well, my grandmother was amazing that way. I mean, we all can think of it immediately when we think of her, because she was in pain for so much of her older life. And she had how many hip replacements?
Five
hip replacements.
What?
And,
wait a minute. Yeah. I've never even heard of that. Is that possible?
They kept replacing.
Yeah.
That's
brutal.
So much pain. In fact, one weekend, her hip was out of socket the whole weekend, and she had back surgeries, and so she lived in chronic pain, but you would never know it. If you looked at her face or heard her talk, she never complained about it. She never was angry at God about it. She just was always in this super joyful mood, and she was very funny. And so it was so great. But one other weekend, my sister and I had gone up to visit her, and we had to leave early the next morning. And Teta was like, make sure you come in and say goodbye before you leave. We're like, no, Teta, we don't want to wake you up. And she was like, no, please don't leave. So the next morning we walk in and open the door, and knowing she's in horrible pain. I mean, she hadn't left her bed the whole time we were there. And so when we opened the door, woke her up, she immediately had this huge bright face and smiling, and her hands were just, you know, like this. And it was so, so dear that, you know, when you wake up, that's your pain, you're in pain. If you have pain and you wake up in the morning, it's very prevalent. And still she was joyful like that. And so all growing up, we always saw that in her. And I've seen that. I wrote about my mom, my sister, and different situations they've been in, with my mom and cancer, my sister having migraines, and just the joy that God can give you. The pain's there, but he can help you overcome it. And a lot of times it's by thinking on other people, you know, and so they do a great job of that. It was a great, great witness to me.
And so how many kids do you have, Rachel Ruth?
Three girls.
You have three girls. These aren't the girls on the cover, I assume, but it looks like
they are. Those are.
They are.
These are your girls? These three cute girls on the cover are literally your children?
Rachel Ruth took the picture.
Yeah, they just happened to be running out space. I was like, oh, I'm going to take a picture. I'm not even a good picture taker. And I took it, and then we used it. They're much older now. They're 19, 18, and 15, but that was a cute picture from the past.
Well, you get credit for dressing them cute. Okay, they didn't do this themselves. Okay, you can't fool me. These little kids were dressed by mommy. You dressed them. You get credit. What a gorgeous cover then. I thought it was posed and whatever. That's beautiful. Okay, I have to ask this. Rachel Ruth, why, Anne, did you and your husband name Rachel Ruth Rachel Ruth? Because that's a little bit of a mouthful. Most people don't have hyphenated names.
Well, in the South, we do.
I know.
But I named her actually after my mother. So she was Ruth Bell. But I felt like Ruth, if people called her Ruth, Ruth Lots was too abrupt. So I added the Rachel, so I'd add more syllables to her name. So Rachel Ruth is what we call her.
I love that. I think that way. Like, syllables matter, right? And so if you have, Ruth Lots is a little tough. Ruth Graham has a nice fit. So you mentioned Rachel Ruth Lots. And, of course, now you're Rachel Ruth Lots, right?
It's kind
Rachel
of a disaster.
Ruth Lots, right. Rachel Ruth Lots, right. Well, but it's no extra charge for all those syllables and hyphens and stuff. You get one name, right? And are you the eldest of the kids?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest. And how many are there? Tell me again.
Three.
I have three children. Son, another daughter that you met, and then Rachel Ruth is the youngest.
Okay. And both your daughters are tall and beautiful. You're all, like, noticeably tall and beautiful. I thought they got those Graham jeans pretty good. let me ask you, when you wrote the book, did you think about it as a book for mothers and daughters? What's the audience particularly for the book?
I feel like for anybody, any believer, we need to be authentic in our faith. We need to have a vibrancy to our relationship with Jesus in order to pass the truth on to somebody else and then have them embrace it. So I introduced the book with the story of the 4x100 meter relay race. And if you watch it in Olympics, which we always love to watch, or, in a track meet where they have the runners that are lined up on the starting blocks, and each team has four runners. And the first runner grips the baton. He takes off from the starting block. He runs as fast as he can. He reaches the second runner. The runner is already in motion, and he passes the baton to him. And it goes on like that until, you know, the fourth runner finishes the race. And so the race is determined not only by those who run the fastest, but those who pass the baton the smoothest. And so I divided the book up into four parts, just sort of mimicking the relay race. And the importance is that we not drop or even bobble the baton.
I feel like your whole family got the gene for sermon illustrations. Like, this is so beautiful. That is so perfect. All right, we'll be right back. We're talking to Ann Graham Lotz and her youngest daughter, Rachel Ruth. The book is Jesus Followers. We'll be right back.
Hanging around, nothing to do but frown. Rainy days and Mondays always get me.
Hey, folks, Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to the authors of Jesus Followers. That's the book, Real Life Lessons for Igniting Faith in the Next Generation. The authors are Ann Graham Lotz and Rachel Ruth Lotz. Right. See, I said that correctly. I have to ask you two questions quickly. First of all, you said, Rachel Ruth, that you called your grandmother Tete, was that it?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
You said that's the Chinese word for what?
For old lady. Isn't that great? That is so her personality.
That's very funny. That is very funny. I mean, when people know you and your family through the preaching of Franklin and you, Anne, and your father, whatever, they wouldn't normally think of you as being funny in that way, but that's actually hilarious that every all of her grandkids called her Tete. How do you say it?
Tete.
Okay. Well, that's my first question. Second question. Anne, you have a website that helps people do Bible study. We talked about it when I was last with you someplace. I can't remember where we were together, but tell my audience about that, because I think people know that unless they're studying the Bible, they're missing out on life. It's like not flossing or exercising, only more important than that. But I think people are practically challenged. How do I do it? So tell us about your website. First of all, what's the name of the website?
Yeah, it's just my name. So Ann Graham Lotz, and Lotz is LOTZ.org. And we have a lot of free resources, a lot of free Bible studies on there. And Eric, what you're referring to is really what helps me maintain the vibrancy in my faith. It's what keeps me alive on the inside of my relationship with Jesus. And so every morning I just take a paragraph of verses. And right now I'm working through the Gospel of Mark. So I just took this morning, I think like six verses, and I list the facts. I just look in the verses to pull out the outstanding facts, and I don't paraphrase. I just pull out the nouns and the verbs and whatever. Then for each fact that I pull out, I want to learn a spiritual lesson, something that, you know, is trying to be, you should be doing or you should not be doing, just something to learn from that fact. And then the third question I ask myself is, I take the lesson and I put it in the form of a question to ask myself. So this morning, one of the verses in Mark, Jesus was saying to take heed, you know, because we're living in a very dangerous time. And so one lesson is that I need to be alert and I need to know what's going on, not only in the Christian realm, but also in our world, that I would be intentional and alert to what's happening. And then the question I ask myself, how alert am I? because I tend to, you know, I can look at the headlines today, but I don't want to read the stories. And I feel like, and the Lord was just saying, I need to be careful and watch. And then he goes on to say that he's prepared us for what's coming, but we need to be in his word. So when I read the Bible and I'm listing the facts, learning the lessons, putting the lessons in the form of a question I would ask myself, many times I hear Jesus or the Spirit of God whispering in my ear. It's like the verse leaps up off the page, and I know that's the Spirit of God whispering in my heart. And that, you know, Eric, when you realize that the God of heaven is leaning down and speaking to you personally when he's got everything to do, you know, it just makes you feel so special. It makes you feel so loved, and it draws you to him. And so there's a sparkle to your faith, because it's like your relationship with him is so personal. It's like being in love. You know, there's just a sparkle to your faith. So we study the Bible for information, and that's so valid, you know, where you can study it and learn all the facts and figures. But don't stop short there, because you want to read the Bible in order to hear his gentle whisper to your own heart that you might be alive in your faith. And, well, I've taught my friend, you know, I taught Rachel Ruth to do that when she was little. She's taught her children to do that, so that her youngest, all three of her girls, read the Bible in using that little exercise, asking what it says, what it means in their lives, and then the takeaway, what they're going to do about it.
And so people can just go to anngrahamlotz.org if they can spell it. Right. If they can't spell it, they're in big trouble. Ann with an E, Graham Lotz, L-O-T-Z, .org. It's funny, Ann, that you say that, because I think people often, you know, with good intentions will go wrong. Like, people will get so focused on the Bible, they'll forget about Jesus. They'll forget that it can be dead letters. You can be a Pharisee and not know the Lord. And I've actually seen people who, they have all the answers, they seem to know everything about the faith, but they don't have that personal relationship. Yeah, and I've known other people that they have a personal relationship. They really don't know the scripture at all, but the personal relationship is so real that you'd say it almost doesn't matter. I mean, of course it matters, but that's the key, is the personal relationship. And there's nothing more horrifying than somebody who has just an intellectual faith. Because when things get hard, you can lose that intellectual faith. You can't lose a relationship with Jesus. And so it means a lot to me that you, who take the Bible so extremely seriously, nonetheless say, but it has to lead to him. If it doesn't lead to him, you've been fooled. You've been shortchanged. So at the website, anngrahamlotz.org, is it a different verse every day or every week, or how do you have it set up there?
No, we have it. Well, of course, there's a different verse every day on the homepage. But if you go to Bible study resources, and listen, you can help me. But if you just go to the resources and look up Bible studies, and then I have videos that show you where I teach you how to do that exercise we just went through so quickly. And then we have worksheets that you can download. We have Bible study materials. In fact, we've just agreed to do a Bible study curriculum for Jesus followers, but that'll come out next year. So
for this book. So people need to read this book first. Okay, folks,
yes.
You got the memo. Before we go, I just have to say again how funny and beautiful I think it is that when you talk about passing the baton on, and how you've set the book up this way, but it almost does seem like you think in sermon illustrations. Is this just something you learned growing up in the Graham family?
You know, I think in patterns. So when I do the scriptures, I think in patterns. So I took the four parts of the relay race, and I pulled them from Genesis chapter 5, and that's a chapter people skip over because it's a genealogy. But I pulled four characters out of there, and one was his witness, that was Abel, and then worship, which was Seth, and Enoch. In their lifetime, people began to call on the name of God. Enoch, who walked with God, and he walked with him so long, he just walked right into heaven. And then Noah, who worked for God. So I took those four characters, and the book is divided into those four parts. So
right.
I sort of think in outlines.
Well, I love it. I love it. It's a joy to see both of you. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for the book, folks. It's Jesus Followers, Ann Graham Lotz and Rachel Ruth Lotz Wright. Thank you. God bless you.
Thank you, Eric. God bless you.
And the downhill run to Papa Ede. Off the wind on this heading line of the Marquesas. You got 80 feet of a water line. Nice.
ho, ho.
Okay, this is the end of hour two.
End of hour
and
two.
And I wanted to end on a high note.
Yes,
sir. Let's be honest, that's not going to happen. No. Actually, no, it is going to happen. I want to talk about this exciting Hezekiah's Tunnel thing. This is very exciting. So before I talk about the exciting thing, you have to promise that if you haven't yet gone to give something, folks, I don't care what it is, but you cannot complain about religious liberty. You can't read the news and say, how is this happening? And you didn't do your part. This really is your fair share. We all need to give something, whether it's the widow's mite or the widow's $10,000. I don't care. It's between you and your God. But this is a time when by giving to the Lions Defending Freedom, you can help the nation point blank. That's it. You're helping the nation because we are suffering from a surfeit of leaders who clearly act as though they hate America. They hate the founding principles like religious liberty. They're destroying America. Merrick Garland and the current what's the imposter's name? Biden? Is it Biden?
Yeah, Uncle
Joe. They seem to be working overtime.
Mm-hmm.
We need your help. Alliance Defending Freedom, we're doing a fundraiser with them. And so before we share the exciting news, I'm going to ask you again, please, before the day is out, go to metaxastalk.com, click on the banner. I don't care what you give. If you give monthly, it's even better. It adds up to 12 times what you give that month. I just did that in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I said if we don't have anybody giving $2,500 yet, anybody who does it, whether it's a monthly thing that adds up to $2,500 or not, you get a hat signed by Donald Trump. I'm holding it in my hand. I was there when he signed it. We will mail this to you along with a copy of Is Atheism Dead signed by me to whomever you like, to you or to your Uncle Charlie, whoever it is. That was a word of knowledge, Uncle Charlie. Okay, so here we go.
Yeah.
We're now going to talk about, so you promise.
Yeah.
ADF.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, we're going to talk about Hezekiah's Tunnel. This is one of the things in the book. When I discovered this, this is in the archaeology section.
Now, just to be clear, you did not discover Hezekiah's Tunnel.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay.
No.
You were that boy,
when I,
right?
When I, because I discovered the story of the discovery of biblical Sodom, I said, I think I need to do a whole section, first on science and then on biblical archaeology. And so I started looking into biblical archaeology, and I found more and more fascinating stories. And I realized I've never heard of these things. And then as I dug in, I realized some of these have crazy stories of how this was found. So just to be clear, there's a passage in Scripture that refers to King Hezekiah when Jerusalem was being besieged by Sennacherib. I'm pretty sure they were the Assyrians. Before that happened, he said, we need to figure out a way to prevent the armies of Sennacherib from getting water. So in other words, when they're going to besiege our city, Jerusalem, they're going to have all this water and they're going to hang out forever until they take us over. We need to cut off the water supply.
Yeah.
And they came with a brilliant engineering idea to divert the fountain that rushed out of Jerusalem and fed the fields around Jerusalem where they planted crops and stuff, to divert all of that water so it stayed inside Jerusalem. And they said, we're going to build a tunnel. So this is the 6th century B.C. They dug a tunnel. It's one of the craziest things. Yeah. But people think, like, did it really happen or is it just this crazy story in Scripture? It was discovered in 1878 or 1878 or something like that by a 15-year-old.
Yep.
And you just read that.
Yeah, it was so exciting. And like you said, it was almost like when the Transcontinental Railroad, when they put in that golden spike, there was a moment where the two tunnels met and the guys on each side were like yelling to each other and they're racing.
You get the impression that Hezekiah, in order to expedite the digging of this tunnel, had a contest.
Yeah, exactly.
And wanted them to meet in the middle. I mean, the whole thing is insane. But what amazes me is I discovered these crazy stories with kids and weird stuff and funny characters. And if you read archaeology stuff, they never mention that. They just discover, they say, Hezekiah's tunnel was discovered, blah, 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 blah. When you hear the backstory, anyway, there's more to it. Maybe we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
Okay, folks. Remember, Alliance Defending Freedom, we need you to go to metaxastalk.com. I'm begging you. Do I need to beg? Go ahead.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.